Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
While some Florida lawmakers are looking to extend the state's red flag law, others have concerns.
There is zero due process in it. If I think about what I would describe the existing red flag as, is the amalgamation between two unique political camps.
Also this week, could next year be the year Florida public school teachers finally get a pay raise? Maybe yes, but then again, maybe not.
It's hard to keep up with the salary increases that are needed for folks who have a living wage.
We'll also learn why Florida lawmakers are coming back to Tallahassee for a special session, and we'll explore a part of the state where opioid abuse runs a distant second to meth addiction. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. A Florida appeals court has rejected a constitutional challenge against the state's red flag law. The policy lets law enforcement officers temporarily remove guns from the homes of people who are seen as a threat to themselves or others. Now, as Regan McCarthy reports, some state lawmakers are looking into an expansion of the rule, while others have filed for a repeal.
When Gilchrist County Sheriff's Deputy Jefferson Davis found out his girlfriend had been cheating on him with another officer, his colleagues say he created a scene, acting violent and threatening the other officer.
He repeatedly makes this cold statement of, I want to shoot these officers in the face, or this officer in the face. I want to sit down and eat his food and wait for law enforcement to come pick me up.
That's Lindsay Lander, the attorney for the Gilchrist County Sheriff's Office. Worried he posed a threat, Gilchrist County deputies filed a so-called risk protection order against Davis, who later sued, saying the move and the red flag law that allowed it violate due process. He's not the only one who's raised those concerns. Here's Tampa Republican Representative Jamie Grant.
There is zero due process in it. So if I think about what I would describe the existing red flag as, is the amalgamation between two unique political camps. If you were to trample the Fourth Amendment, you would probably have some tough-on-crime self-proclaimed conservatives saying this is a good thing. If you were to trample the Second Amendment, you would probably have some self-proclaimed liberals saying this is a good thing.
Grant says a clear pathway for due process should be laid out.
Anytime there's a denial of liberty by government, there needs to be a very clear process for that defendant to access and exercise due process in a clear and transparent and accountable way. I think we have some work to do.
But in an 11-page ruling, Florida's First District Court of Appeal dismissed Davis's claims that the law violates due process rights. The court points out that under state law, a hearing must be held within 14 days of the risk protection order to give a person a chance to be heard. Additionally, the ruling notes the law requires an extra due process safeguard by imposing a heightened, clear, and convincing burden of proof standard. The court decision comes as lawmakers are considering expanding red flag provisions to include family members or mental health workers. Florida Department of Law Enforcement Director Rick Swearingen spoke with members of a Senate committee that's been tasked with evaluating the factors involved in gun violence.
There is going to be a segment of the population that does not trust law enforcement, that will not report to law enforcement for fear, one, that all we're going to do is arrest their child or their family member. So whether you extend that to family members or family members and other members of maybe mental health facility, that certainly those would be options to explore.
Meanwhile, Pensacola Republican Representative Mike Hill has filed a bill to repeal the red flag provision Florida has now. But Grant says that isn't likely to move forward. As chair of the House Criminal Justice Committee, where most gun-related bills will need to be heard, Grant says he understands red flag laws are likely here to stay. But he says that doesn't mean they can't be improved.
As the chairman of criminal justice, I think my focus will be much more on ensuring due process than a repeal of something that may in fact lead to the saving of lives because we had a process and a pathway to alert the authorities that somebody is dangerous, reinforce on the back end with the protections for a defendant who is not actually in any way a threat.
Grant says it's not uncommon in many areas of law for a person to have a retaliatory complaint made against them, even when there's no basis for the claim. He says his hope is to give people more recourse in those instances. Bills on the red flag law, gun reform, and gun safety are already lining up for the legislative session that starts in January. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Could Florida teachers get a long-awaited pay raise in the year 2020? Governor Ron DeSantis, Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran, and Senate Budget Chief Rob Bradley have all talked about it, and the state's largest teachers union is calling for it. But as Lynn Hatter reports, there are plenty of questions about how and whether teachers will get anything.
During a recent State Board of Education meeting in Jacksonville, the newest member, AT&T Executive Joe York, made a case for teacher raises.
Because these teachers are dealing with a complexity, I do believe that salary matters. Bonus is important to incentivize importance, but ultimately compensation is part of it. Because when we do our P&O at AT&T, where we spend our money shows what we value. It's evidence of what we value in our corporation, our corporate values, and I think the same will be within our state budget.
In recent years, some teachers have seen pay boosts through bonuses, not salary increases. And Florida Education President Frederick Ingram argues those bonuses awarded through the state's Best and Brightest program have never counted for much.
We think all bonus programs for teachers are unsatisfactory. And that they don't work in the long haul. This is a cheap way to pay teachers.
Not to mention being problematic. There have been several lawsuits over the bonus system. The state of Florida does not set base pay for teachers. Salaries are largely negotiated at the local level and between local unions and districts. However, the state allocates the money that trickles down to those districts. According to the National Education Association, Florida is near the middle of states when it comes to starting teacher salaries, but it falls to 46th in terms of average compensation. And Leon Classroom Teachers Association President Scott Major says that doesn't work out in a teacher's favor.
For Leon County Schools, you have to work for 20 years with 20 years of service to reach the 49,000 mark. And wage increases such as steps of the past were done away with a law that passed in 2011. So now everything's based off of performance pay. But it hasn't been funded. And so with that, it's hard to keep up with the salary increases that are needed for folks to have a living wage.
The low pay has real-world consequences. Just a quick search of teacher positions on sites like Indeed reveal more than 3,100 teacher vacancies. The problem is so severe, Florida lawmakers attempted to ease some testing standards earlier this year to make it easier to get people in front of classrooms. This is not a new problem either. Here's former Palm Beach Superintendent Robert Avosa speaking to a legislative committee 2 years ago.
And I've been involved in the reform movement for over a decade. I could not have predicted the current conditions and the lack of interest in going into education that we're seeing today.
Around that same time, Cheryl Williams was setting up a booth at a job fair at Florida A&M University. She was actively trying to recruit new teachers to Jackson County. When students approached her booth, Williams jumped in for the sell.
We're offering some incentives in our district. We're hoping they all come to fruition, like first month's rent at a housing in the housing area, free cable for about a year.
But even with offers of free rent and cable and paid moving expenses, it still wasn't enough to sway Karina Gordon, who was job hunting that day.
I don't really know.
Maybe?
It just depends. It all depends.
It depends on
how things happen the next couple of months.
So will this be the year Florida teachers see an actual pay hike? Senate Budget Chairman Rob Bradley has some ideas.
We could change how we do the bonus program, or we could do possible salary increases that are mandated rather than just giving money to the district and then have them on an individual district basis make those decisions.
Even if Florida does decide to raise teacher salaries, it still may not be enough. Leons Mazur says the profession deserves more respect. And that respect, he says, should extend to all the people who make schools run. I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers will soon be headed back to Tallahassee for a special session. They'll deal with just one matter, whether suspended Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel should get his job back or not.
I think that the senators will be able to separate the wheat from the chaff on that, and I think that they'll do the right thing.
We've heard so much about the opioid crisis in Florida and elsewhere, but in some parts of the state's panhandle, a drug that's an old favorite of mostly rural areas turns out to be an even bigger problem.
Some of it is related to population, but some of it is just related to what drugs are being used by that population.
And we'll go on a real South Florida iguana hunt. A special session has been called for the Florida Senate to weigh the reinstatement or permanent removal of suspended Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. Ryan Daly reports a Senate special master is recommending Israel's reinstatement amid Governor Ron DeSantis's ongoing push to oust him.
Well, it's the wrong decision. I'm committed to fulfilling my term and not vacating my responsibility to the people in Broward County, to the community that I serve and fell in love with.
When Scott Israel spent two full days in June appealing his suspension, he and his legal counsel set out to disprove the governor's allegations of incompetence and negligence. DeSantis's claims against Israel center on the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School that claimed the lives of 17, and another mass shooting at the Fort Lauderdale Airport in 2017 that saw 5 deaths. DeSantis has argued Israel failed to provide proper training to deputies tasked with protecting the school. Nick Primrose, who represents DeSantis, argued the frequency of Israel's trainings wasn't adequate.
But unlike SWAT officers, who are supposed to engage in active shooter situations and undergo training multiple times a month, Scott Israel's deputies assigned to schools were not keeping their skills sharp on a monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, or even semi-annual basis.
In the case of the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting, DeSantis has accused Israel of not properly staffing the airport for security. Israel has vehemently defended his training, even describing training sessions during his June hearing.
And we, incredible training, we rappelled a canine dog down off the helicopter into those upper classrooms so that the canine dog could search out the killer.
During questioning by his own attorney, Ben Cuney, Israel said other law enforcement agencies even sought to duplicate the training for their own officers. Since being suspended, Israel and Cuney have maintained DeSantis's accusations have been politically motivated. Cuney called it look-back finger-pointing.
There is a distinct difference between neglect of duty, obligations required by law and those set by the position of office, and whim or fancy on the part of a politician.
Dudley Goodlett, who served as special master for the Senate during Israel's June hearing, made waves in Florida's political landscape this week by recommending Israel be reinstated. In his recommendation, Goodlett says DeSantis didn't prove Israel's policies and training are inconsistent with state law enforcement standards. It resulted in Senate President Bill Galvano calling for a special session, which is to run the entire week of October 21st. Shortly after the release of Goodlett's report, DeSantis stood by all of his allegations and appeared confident putting the final decision in the hands of the Senate.
But there's no doubt that there was incompetence and neglect of duty, and there's no doubt that Florida law says that that sheriff is responsible for those conduct. So I think that the senators will be able to separate the wheat from the chaff on that, and I think that they'll do the right thing.
Meanwhile, Israel held a press conference of his own in South Florida, also sticking to his assertions that there was no incompetence or negligence on his part. He thanked Galvano for calling the special session, adding he believes senators will be fair and impartial.
I want to thank Special Master Goodlett, and I want to thank Senate President Galvano for creating this process.
Ahead of the special session, Galvano is urging senators to review all evidence and arguments put forth by counsel for both parties. There were 7,300 pages of evidence and depositional testimony submitted during the June hearing. Senators have been directed by Galvano not to speak publicly about Israel's suspension, except for in the Rules Committee or during the special session. I'm Ryan Daly.
As Florida continues battling an opioid abuse crisis, another largely forgotten drug has ramped up in North Florida, meth. Its low cost and relative ease of access is making it harder for local law enforcement agencies to control. Shernika Streeter has more.
It removed the taste of addiction from her. This sort of thing, I like to get high, but I don't want no more crack. This meth is where it's at.
Leon County Sheriff's Deputy Michael Wallace knows firsthand what methamphetamine can do to a person. When he worked in Gaston County, he befriended a known drug user.
I knew that this meth thing was going to be one heck of an issue for us when a known crack user didn't want crack.
Florida Department of Law Enforcement Chief Forensic Officer Mary Jane Havener says meth is a drug of choice for users in Tallahassee and North Florida.
A much higher percentage of the overall drugs that are received in the panhandle are methamphetamine. We're in the Orlando and Fort Myers area where you've got those central and southwestern counties. You see a much higher percentage of cocaine.
Meth is made with simple household ingredients, which makes it one of the easiest drugs to access. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, meth users are more susceptible to extreme weight loss, tooth decay, anxiety, and hallucinations.
Meth in itself has become one of those things that, because of the nature of how it's made and what it's made of, it's plentiful.
In a 2017 report by the Florida Medical Examiners, there were a reported 858 meth-related deaths in Florida, a 38% increase from 2016. Of those 2017 deaths, 82 were reported in northern Florida. The FDLE's Havener says the drug is both plentiful and in demand.
Some of it is related to population, but some of it is just related to what drugs are being used by that population, what drugs are being, what drugs that officers are finding when they're doing their operations. And so you do see differences regionally, and you also see some of those differences in the number and type of opiate drugs.
The report shows that meth caused more deaths in the region than cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl. Local law enforcement agencies are trying to crack down on drug trafficking in Tallahassee, but because meth can be made in homes, it's not as obvious, and users often become dealers. So agencies like the Leon County Sheriff's Office rely heavily on old methods like anonymous tips and traffic stops.
We know you're going into a known drug area. They're gonna purchase drugs, and then you're gonna drive out of that area, and we're gonna take an opportunity to reach out and touch you, to stop the car, to see if we have probable cause to stop a car. We're gonna stop the car. We're gonna see about the condition of the driver.
Despite those efforts, Wallace says meth remains problematic.
There are certain drugs that we would look at and say, oh, that's, you know, that's a drug that's going to hit the black community. Oh, that's a white drug. But you know what? Meth has been one of those drugs that has no respect to person.
I'm Sharonika Streeter.
Two new deaths possibly related to vaping have been reported in Florida and nearby Georgia. This marks the first such death in Florida. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control is investigating more than 500 cases of vaping-related illnesses nationwide, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis calls the issue concerning and says he wants more information.
If the run-of-the-mill products is dangerous, and that's something people need to know, if it's more the bootleg stuff, that's important, because if you try to ban the stuff that you can buy in the store and people really want to do it, they may go to the bootleg. That may even be more dangerous. I think all those are questions that need to be answered.
Now Brittany Jarrett reports as vaping makes national headlines, more Florida lawmakers are bringing their agenda and policies to the forefront, even as the CDC says it's not determined what products are causing the problems.
The agency reports more than 500 lung illnesses could be connected to the use of e-cigarettes, and this caught the attention of Tallahassee Community College freshman Savannah Benachowski.
I have heard a lot of national conversation about it, and it does certainly raise a concern to me. I very am much so concerned for my health. I'm trying to cut down a lot. It's just really hard because I've been juuling for 2.5 years.
Benachowski says she was introduced to vaping at a party when her friend let her try their Juul device and says it helps calm her nerves. Earlier this month, Juul, the commonly known e-cigarette brand, was issued a warning by the Federal Food and Drug Administration for marketing its products as a safer alternative to traditional cigarettes. Just 2 days after the Trump administration said it plans to ban flavored e-cigarettes from the market nationwide. E-cigarettes or vapes have become popular for a perception that they're healthier than regular cigarettes. The Center for Responsive Politics says people often overlook that most of the companies that created them are now owned by Big Tobacco.
What we found when speaking with educators and parents was that a lot of times the children didn't even know that vaping products contained nicotine. And when following up with parents, they also felt in many instances it was a harmless habit.
That's Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. The tobacco plant contains the nicotine chemical that a lot of these vaping products have. The CDC says it has not identified any specific product that is linked to all cases. While there are still no definite answers, Florida leaders are taking action. Florida Republican State Senator David Simmons says he will reintroduce a bill to raise the smoking age to 21.
Not going to predict what the House of Representatives might do with this, but I am stating to you that I believe that there is a very cautious optimism that we will be able to pass very meaningful legislation.
Tobacco 21 Eastern Regional Director Shannon Quimby believes that the state of Florida is on the right path and doesn't want any policy in Florida to reverse the progress that's been made.
It's good common sense policy. However, it is just one policy, and there are others. There are complementary policies that are just as important around tobacco that will help keep Florida's youth numbers low.
Quimby also refers to the Tobacco Free Kids campaign, which would work on policy to ban flavored e-cigarettes and vapes such as cotton candy, which suggests that children are a target. New York, California, and Michigan have begun introducing state bans on flavors in hopes to mitigate concerns. Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran is working with the Florida Department of Health to develop a 3-hour course that will serve as an intervention that will educate children on the risk of using these products if they are caught or suspended.
Kids' lungs are, you know, being hospitalized with damage to their lungs in short periods of time. So, you know, the First Lady launched an initiative along with the general, and we adopted a rule last month at her request that now we look at all 67 counties. How are you teaching drug and alcohol abuse? Who's teaching it, and what's the curriculum?
The billion-dollar retail store Walmart Incorporated has also joined the wave by announcing that they will no longer be selling e-cigarettes in efforts to help the nation during this crisis. I'm Brittany Jarrett.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, one weekend a month, two guys from Miami-Dade head to Key West to catch iguanas on city property, including the city cemetery. You can see them navigating around the crypts and headstones, lassoing the lizards, because iguanas are doing some real damage in South Florida, and they don't belong there. We don't know how they got there. Maybe it started as them being pets that escaped or were let loose, but they're invasive, and in South Florida, their numbers have exploded. They eat vegetation and sometimes bird eggs, and they dig into the ground, causing problems with bridges, canals, and grave sites. So catching iguanas is a mission. WLRN's Nancy Klinginger went along to see how it's done in Key West.
Manny Hernandez has a day job with the Miami-Dade Water and Sewer Department, but his passion has always been reptiles.
I tell everybody that I was born with my hands wrapped around my umbilical cord, like if it was a snake. Ever since I was a kid, I would catch the little lizards and stuff. In kindergarten, they would call me on the PA, "There's a lizard in the principal's office, come and get it."
For years, he and his friend Chris Garcia would catch native reptiles and sell them. Now they only catch exotics like tegu lizards and iguanas. And they have more demand for iguana catching than they can handle. They've been catching iguanas at the Key West Cemetery for 2 years.
We've taken out 3,000 iguanas.
So everybody's first question is, what do they do with them? It's legal and in some ways encouraged to kill iguanas in Florida. You just have to make sure you obey animal cruelty laws and whatever rules apply to weapons where you're using them.
We ship them out of state, mostly for pets.
That's out of state, as in where they won't survive if they get loose and do what they've done here in Florida. It's only the little guys who do well in captivity, Hernandez says. Once they're full-fledged adults, they don't like life as pets, so most of them wind up as pet food.
We have a client that we send them euthanized, and he grinds them up and makes sausages. And those sausages are to feed animals that are picky eaters, that they only eat lizards.
How they catch iguanas depends on where they are. In the cemetery, the pole and lasso method works best. Hernandez has come up with a fiberglass pole that has a loop of fishing line at the end. It kind of looks like iguana fishing. He dangles the loop in front of the iguana, and it walks right into the lasso. It usually works, but not always.
You got it, man. It's going to go towards you. The other one right there, it's going on the tree. See it? She said, "I saw what you did to my buddy."
My loop wasn't red.
It's a rare miss for Hernandez, but he's not too worried about it.
The one that gets away from you today, you'll catch it tomorrow. But every iguana has his day with us.
It's only a minute or two later that Hernandez catches two of them in the same area. One is a couple feet long.
It's a big female. That one should have laid about 40 eggs this year or more.
In his other hand, he's got a little guy.
And that one will breed maybe next year or the following.
Hernandez and Garcia also target iguanas at the city's old landfill on Stock Island. Garcia says the lizards were undermining the edges there, digging in for nests.
We tried trapping, we tried noosing, we tried hunting at night, we tried getting on a boat, and they were just too wise. So the only way we've been able to put a dent there is by shooting.
You come out here and just shoot the big ones, you're not doing anything. You're always behind the eight ball. So we go after everything. We go after adults, we go after the babies. If we can dig up a nest and gather the eggs, we'll take the eggs as well.
Biologists say we'll never get rid of iguanas entirely. Hernandez thinks we could if every property owner was committed to eradicating them. They agree that the biggest ally in the battle against the lizards is that rare South Florida phenomenon, the severe cold snap. In Key West, the temperature has never reached freezing. I'm Nancy Klinginger in Key West.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Shernika Streeter, Brittany Jarrett, and Nancy Klinginger. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.